And we're holding on page 70 in Brachos Ois Nun Gimel. We learned yesterday about how when Chizkiyahu was davening for himself to be cured, we said that by Yasef Panev Alakir, he turned his face to the wall, and we said one explanation of that was he invoked the S'chus, he said the Isha Shunamis and her husband made only one wall for Elisha, and in the S'chus of that, their child was revived. Alachis Kam Bakama Shloimu had the S'chus of plating the whole Heichel with silver and gold that you should save me in his S'chus. So now let's talk about that story with the Isha Shunamis and her husband Elisha. The pasuk says Nasan Alias Kirptan. So you have over there, it's in Sefer Melachim, we have it as the Haftarah, Parshas Vayera, that the Isha Shunamis says to her husband, we have this Isha Likim is always passing through our town, let's make for him an Aliyas Kirktan. So what does that mean? Now the simple meaning of Aliyah would be a second floor of a house, and Kir would mean a wall. So Marsha explains, it can't just mean that they had a big second floor in their house, and they're going to partition it and put up a wall. Because Marsha says, usually a second floor of a house like that would have only one staircase leading up to it. At least that's how houses were built in those days. So if you divide it up, then how is Elisha going to get up to his room except by passing through another room? And if you're going to do that, you might as well give him the whole attic. So therefore, we have to understand it's something different. So Rav and Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel argue what it means. One says that it was the second floor of a house, aliyah meaning the second floor, but it was prutza or prua, it was open to the sky, it didn't have a roof on it, and they put a roof on it in order that now it's a place where Elisha can stay. The other one says it was a large entryway, an achsadra technically is an area that's closed in on three sides and open on the fourth. You have the expression, for example, the Gemara says elsewhere, Olam achsadra hudoyma, the world is like an achsadra open on one side. So it was a big achsadra, the chilkul l'shnayim, and they divided it in two by putting a wall in the middle. What? And I said, no, in Pirkei Avos, you have Ha'olam HaZadim and a Prozor, but Pirkei HaMabot, that's something else. A Prozor is a hallway. HaKosev explains that the underlying machloikus over here is we're saying that the Isha Shunamis and her husband wanted that when Elisha stays in town, he should be close to them. That's the reason why they want to have him as an Odach in their house in the first place. But how close do they want him to be? If we say Aliyah B'Keirua, they're saying that we want him in our house, but we still want to have, there should be a certain separation between his room and ours. So we'll be on the ground floor, and he'll be on the second floor. If we say Achsadra D'Ola Haisa, then it means, in other words, it's on the ground floor. They're saying we really want to take the Achsadra, which is the best part of our house, the patio or something, and we want that the Nubi should be as close to us as possible. So that's the Gemara is going to ask. So b'shleim l'mander om achsadra hadin d'chtiv kir. So if we say it was an achsadra and they divided it by putting a wall in the middle, then we understand the word kir means a wall. El l'mander om aliyah, but if you say it was a second floor that originally did not have a roof and now they're putting a roof on it, my kir, so what does the word kir mean? And it says, okay, shakirua. It means not kir maloshin wall, but kir maloshin a roof, maloshin tikra. Which Marsha points out, he brings from Yalkut Shimoni, that they didn't just make a ceiling, Shakirua B'tikro Maziva. They actually made a full-fledged roof with beams and plaster, the whole 9 yards, so it wasn't just them that they're putting like a tarp over it or something, they're actually making it into a proper roof. And therefore, the pasuk can use the word kir for that. The problem was, it's not a problem. It's the Isha Shunam is saying to her husband, this Isha Likim, Elisha, is regularly visiting our town. We should set aside a place for him. He shouldn't have to stay Sam with all the other Orchim. He should have a room of his own. So now the question is, what is that room of his own? On the one hand, the word Aliyah means a second floor of a house. Usually, that's what it means. The Gemara is going to explain another possibility of what it means. And the other possibility, and Kir means a wall. So that's what I'm saying. Marsha says, if it just meant in the simple sense, they're saying we have a second floor of our house, we're going to put up an extra wall in order that we have a room reserved for him. The problem is, how is he going to get up there? There's usually only one staircase leading up to the second floor. Because then how is he going to get in and out? He'd have to go through another room. If he's going to go through another room, you might as well reserve the whole space for him.
The stairs can start from
outside. No, Marsha is understanding that there was only one staircase in the house, and they to go from the first floor to the second floor, and therefore if they're dividing it up, then he's gonna, in order to get in and out of his room, he'd have to go through a different room. So that's why the Gemara has these two possibilities. So the Gemara says, Bishleim Lamanda Omer Aliyah. Okay, now on the other hand, if we say that it was an Aliyah, second floor, Hainin Dechdiv Aliyah Skir. Okay, the Pasuk says Aliyah, which means the second floor of a house. El Lamanda Omer Achsadra, but if you say that it was an Achsadra, it was a porch or a patio or something, my Aliyah Kir. So my Aliyah Skir, why are we calling it Aliyah, which means something that you go up to, a second floor of a house? And the answer is, according to that opinion, it means Mu'ula Shibabatin, means the best part of the house. Now, then they continued, V'nosim Moisham mita b'shulchan v'kisei menorah, the Isha Shunamis tells her husband, we'll put for him over there a bed and a table and a chair and a lamp. Those are the basic things that a person needs in his room. There is, by the way, there's a minor of the Friedrich Rebbe, you can find it in my Maamarim from Tracim, where he shtells the Chanas Pasuk, and he explains the deeper meaning behind it, up in Avoida, that the Isha Lakim over Aleinu Tomid is the Neshama, and you have to prepare for it, this kind of Ruchni stick of furniture, in order that it has a place to be able to accomplish within you what it's supposed to accomplish. Anyway, so we're saying that they're benefiting him by giving him this furniture and making it available for him. So the Gemara says, Omer Abaye v'itemer Rav Yitzchak. Abaye, some say Rav Yitzchak says, Haroitza lehones, if a person wants to have hana from other people, he's visiting other people and he'll have hana from them, yehone, then he's allowed to do that to Elisha, just like Elisha did. We shouldn't say that there was any isser in it. We shouldn't say that maybe it would be a midas tzidus not to take hana from other people. Now, you have, for example, we know that a Talmud Chacham is not supposed to make, it says in Pirkei Avos, you can't make the Torah kaudim lachtachba, a shovel to dig your parnasa with. The Rambam explains there in Pirush HaMishnayos, that means that would be, for example, to take a regular payment or something for learning, for teaching Torah, that you can't be doing. But here we're talking about as an occasional thing where he's passing through and they're going to give him a present, that he's allowed to do. Marshaw adds also, what about sonim atonis yichya? What about the idea that a person should hate receiving gifts? He says the difference is when we're talking about when a person is on the road, he doesn't have his furniture with him. He's considered in effect like an oni because he doesn't have the things with him that he normally needs. So therefore, if he wants to have hana from other people and allow that people should provide him these kinds of basic furniture, then gesundheit. But not other kinds of things. You see, in fact, Maharsha says, Elisha himself, later on, you have the story with Naaman, where he wanted to offer Elisha, after he was cured of Tzaraas, he wanted to offer him silver and clothing and whatnot, and Elisha turned it down, and when David took it, then Elisha cursed him. So we see, it's not that Elisha is open to receiving any kind of gifts, but that's the when he's on the road, and therefore he's in effect and on. Conversely, Abayo, Rav Yitzchak continues, if a person does not want to have hana from other people, al yohana, then he has the right not to do that, to Shmuel Haramasi, he can act like the way Shmuel from Ramah, the Navi Shmuel did. And the point is, Rashi says, you shouldn't think if a person acts that way, it's not that he's acting as in a way of gasus or ruach, that he's saying, I'm higher than you, and therefore you're beneath me to take anything, for that I should take anything from you, it's not considered a matter of sinah. It's a valid reason to do it. And now, how did Shmuel do it? Shenema was Shuvasa Haramasaki Chumbe. So the Pasuk describes how he would travel around Eretz Yisrael and teach the people Torah and judge their cases and so forth. And then it says it was Shuvasa Haramasa. He would return to Roma, Kishumbe, because there was his house. Now, why do we need to be told that his house was there? We know from earlier Pesukim that he lived in Roma. Doesn't need to mention it again. But Amar Rabbi Yechanan shekol makom shahalach sham beisei imay means wherever Shmuel went, he took his house with him. He had an RV with him, to put it in modern terms. And wherever he went, he had his furniture and his clay tashmish and whatever with him, such that he doesn't need to rely on the local balabata. One point being, he was going around to judge the people, so he needs to take extra care that there was actually a Daf Yomi in Ksubas a few days ago, that a dayan has to take extra care not to even get the smallest smidgen of hana from people who he might be judging, because then you have a problem with sheichad. So therefore he had to take that extra measure. So we're saying that the chalal, though a person wants to do that, doesn't hate, it's a valid way to do it. Okay, getting back now to the story of Elisha. So now, a few psukim earlier, Vatoimer Elisha, the Isha Shunamis says to her husband, Hinina yodaiti ki Isha lekim kodeshu, behold now I know that this is a man of Hashem who is holy. So first of all, how does she, so she's telling her husband, implying that her husband didn't realize it. This teaches us that women are more familiar with the character of Urchim more than a man is, because they're at home more. So therefore, so they get to know the Orchim.
The
Bini Yisrael no doubt helps with that. Also, yeah, Ion Yaakov points out, by the way, the word Orchim in the plural is because the Gemara is going to point out soon, she realized, on the other hand, that Gechazi, Elisha's Mesharet, is not of that caliber. So therefore, so she actually recognized both Orchim, the caliber of Elisha, and the lack of caliber of Gechazi. Now, when we say Kodeshu, she says he's holy. Mino Yoda. Okay, she knows he's an Isha Elikim, he's a Navi. How specifically does she know he's Kodesh? Where does she see something of his Kedusha? So Rav Shmuel, argue how she knew it. Chad Omer Shalei Rosa Zvuv Oiver Al Shulchan. One is that she saw that flies never flew over the table where he eats. Now, Marsha explains, when a tzaddik eats, it's like the Mizbeach. A tzaddik's table is like a Mizbeach. And we know the Mizbeach in the area around it, in the Beis HaMikdash. We say in Pirkei Avos, one of the Nisim Shanasu Beis HaMikdash was that the, what do you call it? Lenira Zvuva Beis HaMikdashim. There were no flies ever in the area where they cut up the Korbanos. So therefore, keeping with that then, when she saw that there were no flies anywhere near, Elisha's food, then that told her that he's an Ish Kodesh. The other one says, Sodin Shopishtan, Tzia Loyamitase, she put linen sheets on his bed, Beloy Rasa Keri Olav, and she never saw any Keri on those sheets. Even though the person is traveling makes him more prone to Tumas Keri, but with him that never happened. In fact, there's an explanation from the Vilna Gaon that says those are tack of the two areas in which the Kedusha of a Yid is the most marked. You see, in fact, you look in the Rambam, how he set up a Sefer. He has Sefer Kedusha, and he explains in his Akdama, in fact, that Sefer Kedusha, he focuses on the two areas of mitzvahs in which we see the Kedusha of a Yid, where it says on them that the Eidusha says, I made you a holy nation. One is Macholas Asuris, and the other one is Bias Asuris. So therefore, in keeping with that, she saw his Yusha in those two areas, as far as his food and as far as his bed. So then when she says Kodesh Hu, she says he is holy. So that's a miut. Amr of Yosef of Chanina, she's saying to her husband, Hu Kodesh Hamashor Se'ene Kodesh. He's holy, but his attendant, Gechazi, is not. Shenema, and we have later on in the story, after she has a son, and then one day the son is crying out, Roshi, Roshi, and they bring him home and he dies, and she rushes off to Elisha to ask him to complain to him and to ask for him to help. Then the pasuk says, she fell down on her face in front of Elisha, she's holding on to his legs, and the pasuk says, Vayigash Gechazi Lahodfa. The pasuk says, Gechazi came close to push her off. And Amr of Yosef Chanina, Sha'achza Bahoid Yafya. The word Lahodfa is a nutrikon, it's short for the words Hoid Yafya. He grabbed her by the Hoid, by the glory Yafya of her beauty, which is, Marsha said, that means he grabbed her by her breasts and then pushed her away. Marsha says, how does the Gemara know that? Because the next thing Elisha says to her is, he says, Harpe lo, he says, leave her alone. Now, if he had just pushed her and now his hands are off her, there's nothing to leave her alone. So therefore, his mashmah is grabbing onto something of her, and therefore Elisha is telling him hands off. Why is that called Hoid Yafya? Marshal refers to, we learned a few days ago, that particularly the fact that the Eidishta created Dadim B'mkoyim Bina is a tremendous Hoid, a tremendous glory for a human being, that they don't have, it's not lower down on the body like the way it is by animals. Therefore, that can be described as Hoid Yafya, the glory of her beauty. So the fact that he grabbed her in such a pritzistic way shows. Now, to be sure, that was after the earlier part of the story. When she says, Isha the Kim Kodesh Hu was before that story. Nevertheless, the point is she realized already from before that he has a tendency towards such a thing, and later on it came out in practice. With that said, there are different explanations. I mean, first, you know, you're going to have him grab her in such a pritzistic way, you know. There are other explanations. Ben Yehoyada says that maybe actually Hoid Yafya means her face. The pasuk says she was lying on her face on the ground in front of Elisha, so maybe like he's picking her up to move her, so he's holding on to her, forehead and her face. So that's the Hoid Yafya, but still, so it's not quite as pritzistic, but still. There's an explanation from Reb Tzadik HaKoyen Lublin where he says, it's not maybe that he deliberately, he follows Marsha's pshat and it means her breast, but he says, okay, it's not that he meant to grab her by there. By punkt it happened, that was where he grabbed a hold of the push. But still, the fact that he was not a Kaddish, unlike Elisha, is why it came out that way. Otherwise, the Eidusha would have protected him from doing such a thing in the first place. And then the Ma'ure Naim of Nochem Chernobler has a very interesting explanation on it. He says it's meant symbolically. Meaning, what do we have? The continuation of the story over there is that Elisha tells him, he takes Tate and tells him, take my stick and go me Mechai and Nason the boy. And what do we know? We know that he was mocking the whole thing, and then he's running along, and Medrash says, he's telling everybody, oh, you take the stick to me Mechai and Nason, and he gets there and nothing happens. So the point is that Moir Nain says that the vort is, in other words, so you have, there's the hod yafya, there's the beauty, the chitzoniastic beauty of the Torah, in particular the ability of how to go about being mechayim nesin, but then you have the penius of it, which is the emuna of it. He grabbed only onto the hod yafya, only onto the chitzonias, and was missing the emuna in it, which is why it didn't work. In any case, the point is that we're saying the Isha Shunamis perceived all of that, even ahead of time, and therefore, so now that's why she's saying Kaddish Hu. She says to her husband, over Aleinu Tomid, she says that Elisha is constantly passing by us. Now, it's not constant. It's whenever he happens to be in town. So you can't say Tomid, at least fine. Marsha points out, you don't have, Tomid doesn't necessarily have to be every day. It could be something that's every week or whatever, but at least it has to be something that has a regular schedule. Elisha passing through Shunem is not specifically a regular schedule for it. So why is she saying the word Tomid? It means, if a person hosts a Talmud Chacham in his house, and he gives him hana, he allows him to benefit from his machasim, like the Isha Shunamis that her husband did for Elisha, mala all of our chosim kilo hikru from makruv tmidim, then Hashem counts it on their behalf as if they brought a korban Talmud. The same way, Marashah says, the tmidim are, so to speak, the food of Hashem. So the same way, when a person gives a Talmud Chacham food, and we just said, a Talmud Chacham's table is like the Mizbeach, so therefore it's considered as though he's bringing a korban to Hashem. We find, for example, that when Yisrael came and they had a meal over there, Oilov Zvachim Elikim, and they ate with Nehar Elikim, that it means that because Talmud Chachamim, Aaron and Moshe were present, therefore it was considered like a korban that was brought to Hashem. So in the same way, the Isha Shunamis and her husband had that source. And therefore, the Pasuk used the word Tomid for it. A different cute little story involving these words over Aleinu Tomid, by the way, nothing to do with the Gemara except for the fact that it's the same Pasuk. So we know there was Reb Nosson Adler in Frankfurt. He was one of the Rebbeim of Chassam Sofer. And even when he was a boy, he was a Dohoi ben Yid. He had his own path in Avodas Hashem, a form of Chassidus, basically. Among other things, he used to sit up all night and learn, and then, of course, have to sleep at some point. So the next day, he would often make it late to shul. So the Chida, at one point, was visiting Frankfurt, and every day he sees this boy, who's coming by the end of Davin, by Aleinu. So he said, this is the pasuk, Isha Lekim Kodeshu over Aleinu Tomei. He's always passing by when Aleinu comes. Okay. V'amar Rabbi Yosef of Chanina B'shem Rabbi Lezman Yaakov. Again, having mentioned one thing that Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says in his name, he mentioned another thing. Al Yamud Adam Mokim Gavoya Vispalo. A person should not stand in a high place in Davin. El Mokim Nomoch Vispalo. A person should stand in a low place in Davin. Shenem Mamakim Kosicha Hashem. As the Pasuk says, I call out to you Hashem from the depths. Now, I mean, of course it means that a person has to have the emotion of feeling in the depths in front of Hashem, but as you have the expression, that Sefer Achinuch always says, "Ha'odim nifok kafipo loisav." A person is affected by what they actually do. So when a person puts himself in a physically low place, then it helps to develop by him the emotion of taka feeling lowly in front of Hashem. Tani nami hachi. We learn similarly in a brisa, lo yamid odim lo yagabi kisei. A person is not allowed to stand when he's davening shemana esrei on a chair, the lo yagabi shrafraf, or on a bench or a stool. The shrafraf is more a stool. The lo yamakim gavoya, a footstool, yeah. The lo yamakim gavoya, or on a high place, the yispalel and davening shemana esrei. Ela b'makim nomoch v'yispalel. Rather, a person should stand in a low place and daven. Because there's no being high in front of Hashem. As the Pasuk says, I call out to you from the depths, Hashem. And also you have another Pasuk showing the sense of anivus that a person has to have when he davens in front of Hashem, a tefillah of the oni when he is fainting, when he feels like he's fainting in front of the greatness of Hashem. So this is actually a halacha that's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Now, one thing it points out if the area that a person is standing on is dalad al dalad amos or more, or if it's surrounded by a railing, then this din doesn't apply, because then it's considered a mokum la'atzmai. Only we're talking about, if a person stands, let's say, on top of a chair in shul, then you have the issue. B'chalal, standing on a chair is a different matter also, a chair or a stool, you have the problem, it's wobbly, and a person is not going to be able to be mechaben in davening. But we're talking about, even if you don't have that issue, if it's less than dalad al dalad, it's not surrounded by a railing, then you're not supposed to daven on it. But they actually had some of the old shuls in Europe. I've read this about the Alpine shul and other shuls were type of built with going down. You'd actually have to go down so a few steps from the street to get into them, also in keeping with this idea of Mima Makim Kosef Hashem. Some places also, it's seen, the Mephoshim also explained many times in the shuls of the times of the Gemara, the place where the chazan would stand would be lower than the rest of the shul. And for that reason, the usual expression is yoded with that tape, that it really goes down to daven by the arm. When a person is davening Shemana Esrei, he has to keep his feet together. As you find by the Malachim, that their feet were a straight foot, implying they keep their feet together, and it appears like one leg. So what's the significance of it? The Rashba over here brings an explanation. A certain min once asked the Rashba about a number of these statements of the Gemara, and the Rashba gave him an answer at great length. In this particular one, he says there's two reasons. Number one, a person should be acting when they're davening as though like they're chained up. I have no ability to accomplish anything on my own. Only the Eved Shvi gives me the power to. Therefore, I'm standing rooted in my place. I can't move, showing that I depend completely on Hashem giving me the power to do anything. For the same reason, actually, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that under some circumstances, a person should be davening with their hands clasped one on the other, like this. Same idea. In other words, he's showing that I can't move my hands either without the Eibishter giving me the power to. Second of all, then he goes on to explain the idea is the Eibishter created a person that he should gain a shleimus and become on the level of the Malachim and even beyond the Malachim. And since we're saying that Malachim have Ragleim Rego Yishara, then we want to be like them and tackle what does it mean. The Rashba goes on to explain what does it mean, Ragleim Rego Yishara. The word regel can also mean a cause of something, like you have in the passage by Baruch Hashem Oscha L'Ragli, where Yaakov says to love and Hashem blessed you because of me. So therefore, Regel Yishara represents the idea, the Malachim, they do exactly what Hashem wants. So you can't say, for example, that there's a different cause of them doing such and such. The only cause of them doing anything is Hashem's Ratzon. So therefore, a person has to also stand in that posture in Shemana Esrei, showing that the only cause that he recognizes that the way he should live his life is the only cause that will be for him to do anything is what the Eibishter wants. So there's that. There's other ideas of what it represents. Standing like that with a person's feet together. Another explanation. Eitz Yosef brings another explanation that it brings from Ma'ari Abuhav that it represents that I can't even run away. For example, I'm again similar to what the Rashba is saying, but putting in a different osius. I don't want to run away from Hashem. I want to stand here in front of Hashem as long as possible. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav Yechanan, Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Chanina, Meshum, Rav Elazar, Ben Yaakov, Mai Dichtiv Lois Soichlu Al Adam. What does it mean, the Pasuk, don't eat on the blood? Now, there are actually a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Maharsha refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that learns half a dozen different dinim from that Pasuk. It's a warning to the Ben Sur Ramura, don't eat in a way that's going to lead to bloodshed. It includes, for example, you're not allowed to eat meat of Korbanos before the blood of them is sprinkled on the Mizbeach. And it includes a bunch of the Sanhedrin, the members of a base, they have to fast on the day when they sentence somebody to death. B'chola b'chola. But now we're saying one of the meanings of it is lo soichlu kodim shekaspalu al dimcha. Don't eat before you daven regarding your own blood. You're asking Hashem to preserve your blood and to preserve your life. So therefore, don't be eating before it. Now, you have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch about this. You have, you know, there are exceptions. In particular, you know, a person can take a drink, for example, before they daven. And even you have, as in the famous story in Hayom Yom with Rebbe Tzimrivka, that if a person has to eat because of their health, then fine, you know, better daven and better essen sort of daven than the other way around. So that's why you have, for example, you know, the Minhag Olam, they have a piece of cake or something on Shabbos, on Shabbos morning before they daven. Sorry, the fact that Shabbos morning we daven late. But the point is, you're not eating in order to fill yourself up. As the Gemara is going to say over here, over the person's eating in order to be able to be mechaven and daven. So that's legitimate. And the Gemara continues, Ikadamri, another version, Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, Amr Rabbi Yechon, and Amr Rabbi Yosi, Bechanina, Meshumer, Belezman Yaakov, Kola, Oichel, Veshoisev, Achakach, Mespalel, a person eats and drinks, and then he davens, all of Akosiv Oimer, Veoisi, he shlach to Afri Gavrecha. On such a person, the Pasuk says on him the expression, you threw me behind your, behind Gevecha. Literally, Gevecha means your back or your body. But it means, Altikri, Gevecha, Ele, Gevecha. Don't read the word gevecha, your body, behind your body, behind your back. Ela ge'echa, behind, meaning that after your gaiva. Meaning, omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, la'achash, nizgorash, zeh. What do you say? Well, you're after the guy has made himself about gaiva by eating and drinking and being comfortable, by yishvan yishurun, then kibble all of malchus shemayim. Now he's first going to accept on himself, oh, malchus shemayim. So you can't do that. The Rashba explains, continuing in his explanation over here, he says, first of all, what's this lefneish spalo al dimchem? What's the expression dafka al dimchem? So he says, because you think about it, really a person does averus, sooner or later they deserve to have their blood removed from them and to no longer be living. So therefore, so a person has to accomplish what the Eibush to put him in the world for in order to, and that includes that he has to daven and thank Hashem, and that gives him the right to go on living. So now, if he goes and eats and drinks that before that, then he's showing that he's bringing himself to a gaiva. He's showing, first of all, that's more important than davening. And he's showing that he has a gaiva. And therefore, the altikri gevecha ele geyecha, the Rashba says, not even really a real altikri. We're actually saying that to daven after gavecha, after you've filled up your body with eating and drinking, is gaiva. That itself is gaiva. And therefore, the Eibush is saying, you shouldn't be doing that. Marshaw actually mentioned that also we find out the context of that pasuk Oisi Shlach Da'achin Gavecha is the Eibush was sending a Navi to tell Yeravam off for what he did with the Egla Azav and all. And with Yeravam also we find that his Gaiva is what led him to all of that, the idea that he doesn't want the Jewish people to return to Rechavam, and then we even see Rechavam sitting in the Azara and him standing. So you really have a direct connection between Gevecha and Geach. The Mishnah goes on to say that it talks about the time of Kriya Shema in the morning, and it says you have Ad Shalosh Shoyos, and then the Mishnah says if a person lays Shema after Sof Zman Kriya Shema, then the Mishnah says that the Loi Hifsid, he hasn't lost out to Odom HaKodem HaTorah, it's considered like a person is learning Torah. In other words, he doesn't have the schar of learning Kriya Shema in its bizmana, but he still does have the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, because poetry saying pieces of Torah. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Mani, Godol HaKodem Kriya Shema, Bo Inosa, Yosima Osef HaTorah. We see from the wording of the Mishnah that a person who says Kriya Shema in its time before the Sof Zman is greater than someone who learns Torah. We're saying when a person says Kriya Shema after the Zman, that he's like a person who reads from the Torah, implying that learning at Bizmana is greater than learning Torah. Which Tosfos says, in other words, we don't mean when it's the time for Shema. When it's the time for Shema, Taka, a person shouldn't be Osek Batorah. You say, it says even Rav Shimon Ben Yochai would interrupt his learning Torah. He was Torah Seh Nosei, and even he would interrupt for Kriya Shema. What we mean is that compared to a person who's Osek and Torah at other times of the day, saying Kriya Shema Bizmana is greater even than that. Further on, the next Mishnah talks about the machlokas b'shama b'shillel. What posture do you say Kriya Shema in? Yeah, b'shama says that in the evening you should be laying down and in the morning you should be standing up because of shach b'chol kumacha. And b'shillel says you can say it in any posture you want. There are Rishonim, by the way, who learn, Rabbeinu Yonah and other Rishonim, who learn that when b'shama says matin, it does, which we're going to have now in the Gemara, it doesn't mean laying down, it means sitting. Sitting, maybe reclining a little bit. Anyway, b'shama holds a certain posture and b'shillel says that not. And the Gemara goes on to discuss. So the Mishnah says, the Sibyl says, because after all it says, v'lech chavaderech, and that implies that you can say Shema when you're walking in the same way you can say it in any other position, and then the Shema and the Sibyl go back and forth on it in the Gemara. So one thing in the course of that, the Gemara mentions the idea that even if a person is torud, even if a person is distracted by his personal matters, he still has to daven, and he still has to say Kriya Shema and put on tefillin and so forth. And the Gemara mentions, Omer Rav Ada Bar Zavda, Omer Rav, Ovel chayiv b'chol mitzvahs amuris b'chol mitzvahs amuris b'chol. Even an ovel is chayiv in all the mitzvahs. Now, not an oinin, but an ovo, after the kvura is taking place, is chayiv in all mitzvahs, chutz min tefillin, with the exception of tefillin, shenema, sharei nema behen, pe'er, because tefillin are called glory. Shenema pe'ercha chavoy shalecha. We find Hashem tells Yechezkel, he tells him your wife is going to pass away, and you are not going to be praving Avelos in the normal way. You're going to be acting in certain ways different than a regular ovel, and that way when people ask you what that's all about, you'll tell them that this is what's going to happen at the time of the Churban. And Hashem tells him, Pe'ercha chavoy shalecha, put on your pe'er, your glory, meaning your tefillin. Meaning even though an ovel normally doesn't, Hashem is telling Yechezkel, you should. So what's the point? So Rashi says an ovel is misgoyel b'tzara, he's wallowing in his tzar, misgoyel b'tzara b'ofer, or in other places in Shas, he uses the expression misgoyel b'ofer kauner, like his glory, his horn, which is a symbol of glory and power in Tanakh, is wallowing in the dust. So therefore, it's not appropriate that he should be putting on pe'er, that he should be putting on the beautiful tefillin. Tosfos points out, you actually need both psukim, because first of all, otherwise you would think, once we're saying that an ovel is potter from tefillin, maybe he should be potter from other mitzvahs as well, and if we need a special reason to say that tefillin are something different. And on the other hand, the fact is, you also need Rashi's reason about ma'olah ba'ofer karnei, why is he chayev on the other days, why is he potter only on the first day, and the reason, and it has to be because only on the first day is his me'olah ba'ofer karnei really intense. And that's not the halacha. The first day, an ovel is potter from tefillin, and the rest of the day is not. In practice, what you have is really generally, the ovel generally puts on tefillin right after the kvura. Because when we say he's potter on the first day, really only means until the kvura takes place. Okay. Further on, the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, v'shilol oimrim oimrim v'korin yoshrim v'korin matin v'korin, hocham v'aderach v'korin, v'shilol oimrim v'korin, you can stand when you say in Kriyashma, yoshrim v'korin, you can sit when you say Kriyashma, matin v'korin, you can be lying down, not lying down, by the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, you can't be lying like so all the way flat on your back or something, that wouldn't be derech eretz to Kriyashma, but it means, in particular, the Gemara mentions you have somebody, let's say, who's sick, or his fat, or whatever, so he can sort of be laying down and like turning on his side a little bit. You can be walking on the road and saying Krishma, hosting the Malachim the Koran, you can be doing his Malacha and saying Krishma. Later on in the Masechta, actually in the second parak, it talks about there's a difference in that regard between the first Pasuk of Shema and the rest of Shema. The first Pasuk you have to stop your work and stop your walking and so on and so forth to be Mechavin, the rest of it less so. And the Bryce says, happened once that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah were both reclining and eating the pashtus in a certain place. Rabbi Shmuel was sitting down or lying down, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was sitting up straight. Then when it came time for Krishma, Rabbi Elazar changed his position from sitting upright and leaned down, or sat in a reclining position, and Rabbi Shmuel also changed his position and sat straight up. So, Omalei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Shmuel, he says, Yishmol Ochi, Em Shalacha Moshel, Amar Devadayma. What are you doing that before you were lying down? Even Vesilil in the Mishnah, after all, doesn't say you can't be lying down for Shema. They're saying you don't have to. So why are you davka sitting in a different posture to show what are you trying to prove with that? This is Em Shalacha Moshel, Amar Devadayma. Let me give you an analogy, what you just did, what it's like. Imagine you have a person, people tell him you have a long beard, and he tells them, fine, in that case, let it go to the destroyers. You're complimenting my beard, I'm going to shave it off, I'm going to destroy it. On the side of it here, Yad Yosef brings a different explanation from the Oruch, that it means, he says, he means faket. I'm growing my beard long, aftalachos, against those people who cut and shave their beards, so I'm aftalachos going against them. Anyway, the point is, it's a figure of speech, saying like when a person acts davka, just to be kapoyer, just to be the opposite of everybody else. So aftach, so the same word, Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Shmuel, kol zman sha'aftach ate, you seem to be doing the same thing. Kol zman sha'ani zokuf ate muta, as long as I was sitting up straight, you're reclining. Achshav sha'ani tesi, now all of a sudden I recline. Ate zakafta, all of a sudden you sat up straight. What's the point? Amalei, said Rabbi Shmuel tells him, faker, I did the right thing. I did according to what Bishilo says. But after Sisi Kadiva Bishamai, you're following what Bishamai is saying, that you daft after recline or sit reclining for Krishna. And that's not right. When Bishamai became Bishilo in a Mishnah, you have a Mishnah over there where it says over there that Rapirfin one time did, and then he was in danger from Liskin, and the Chachamim criticized him for it. Veloy Oid, not only that. So first of all, I'm doing like Bishilo. If anything, what I did is more correct. Veloy Oid, and not only that, even if you want to say that fine, the civil doesn't mind a person reclining, they're just saying he doesn't have to, but El Shema Yiru Atamidim Yikbu Halacha L'Doris, conceivably the Talmidim, if they see me reclining and they see you reclining, they're going to think that that is what needs to be done, and they're going to establish Halacha for all time that it has to be that way, and that would be wrong because the fact is that Halacha is like the civil. So in other words, the point is that Rabbi Lozman Azariah is telling him, or Rabbi Shmuel, rather, is telling him, there is a concept of Midas Chassidus, sure, but you have to be careful that you don't do the Midas Chassidus in such a way that it's going to mislead people into thinking into applying the halacha wrong. So therefore, in a case like this, yes, I daft have to act the opposite of what you're doing in order that everybody should realize what the real halacha is. Once that's established, sure, then once everybody knows that, then sure, I could recline if I wanted. Okay, further on, the next Mishnah talks about the brachas before and after Shema. So the Gemara says, "My mevorich." What is the bracha? What are the brachas on Shema? In particular, the Mishnah says you have two brachas before Shema in the morning. So what's the nusach of the bracha in the morning? Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yoshia, Amar Rabbi Yoshia. The first one is Yotzer Or Uvorich Choshen. Hashem forms light and creates darkness. So Rashi, by the way, makes the point of saying you shouldn't think Yishtabach is one of them. Yishtabach is the end of Pesukah Dezimra. In fact, you can say it even before Zman Kishma. So therefore, the two brachas are Yotzer Or, which ends with Yotzer Hamoris, and the second one, the Gemara goes on later on to discuss the second one. The Gemara mentions the Machloikas, which is not here in Ein Yaakov, whether the second one begins Aver Rabo or Abbas Olam, and that's why you have the different Nuschos between Nusach Ashkenaz and Nusach Sfarad and Nusach Ari, which one you say. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, Lema Yotzer Or Uvoda Noiva. Now, to say Choshech is a very negative thing. We always try to use Lashon Nekiya. You have a sugya at the beginning of Pesachim that talks about when it says over there Ur La'aba Aser, and the Gemara gets into a long discussion over there about saying that Ur is actually a euphemism for the nighttime. So why are we using the word Choshech straight out? Lema Yotzer Or Uvoda Noiga. Let's rather use the word Noiga, which the word Noiga means kind of like twilight or like a dim light. So therefore, that would be a nicer way of saying Choshech rather than saying it straight out. And yet, in fact, in that Gemara in Pesachim, you have the two different opinions, what Ur La'aba Aser means. And the Gemara says one of them is that Ur means Nagihi, which is the same Shurdish as Noiga, and that, which means the night. So, it means like very, not the night, actually. It means like very early in the morning when it's still like half dark outside. Anyway, so why don't we say Noiga? Because we're using the Lashon HaPasuk. The words Yotzer Or Uvoda Choshech come from a Pasuk in Yeshaya, and the Chachamim were misakin the Bracha based on it. Yeah, but that same pasuk in Yeshaya continues. Then the whole pasuk goes Yotzer Or Uvoda Choshech Oseh Shalom Uvoda Ra Ani Hashem Oseh Kol Eila. So we, as it is, we don't use the word Oseh Ra, that Uvoda Ra that it says in the pasuk. We change it to Uvoda Es Hakol Mikamin Kedichtiv. Do we say like the Lashon HaPasuk? We don't. We say Uvoda Es Hakol. Instead of using the word Ra in the bracha, we replace it with Uvoda Es Hakol to use nicer language. So the same thing. Why didn't the Chachamim substitute instead of Choshech? Instead, they should use a nicer word like Noiga. And the answer is Elo Amar Rava Kedela Haskim Midas Yoyim VaLayla UMidas Layla VaYoyim. The reason is because during the daytime we have to mention the fact that Hashem creates the night, and by the night we have to mention that Hashem creates the day. Marashal refers to something from Abenu Yonah that says that the reason is that the Gemara mentions in a different place that the Amin asks Rebbe, it seems since the pasuk says Yotzer Or Uvoda Choshech, it sounds like Chas V'Shalom, there are two different creators, one of light and one of darkness, which we know is a popular notion among the Minim of that time. And then Rebbe explains to him that no, when it says Oseh Shalom Uvoda Ra, then it makes it clear, and you have other pasukim that make it clear that Hashem created both of them. The point is, therefore, we want to show when we're saying the bracha that in the daytime we want to stress that Hashem also creates the night, and vice versa, in order to show that we acknowledge that it's one Hashem who created both of them. So therefore, in the morning we do want to say the word choshech rather than replacing it with a nicer word like noik. So the Gemara asks, the Shlomo Midas Laila Bayom Kedam Yunin Yotze Urvar Choshech. Okay, where are we mentioning the nighttime, the choshech of the nighttime? In the daytime, we just said, we're saying Yotze Urvar Choshech. El Midas Yom Balaila Heichem Hashkachas Lo. Where is the Nusach in the nighttime brachas where we mention the daytime, where we mention the light of the daytime? Amar Abai, can we say Golo Orim Pnei Choshech Choshech Pnei Er? That Hashem rolls away light and replaces it with darkness, and darkness to be replaced with light. So yeah, we mentioned Ur and Choshech, both of them in Ma'ariv as well. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola for Lamed Tishrei, first day of Rosh Chodesh. Mashiach's Malchus is going to be on a higher level even than Moshe Rabbeinu's Malchus. Because we know one thing about Mashiach is going to be Morach V'Doyin, where you have the two, Morach means that he smells, and V'Doyin you have the two different explanations. It means Meloshin Vadai, that he'll be certain of whatever his conclusion, or V'Doyin Meloshin Dayan, that he'll smell and thereby he'll judge. So he's going to be judging based on Reach, that he's going to have the koichas to be able to see the pnimius of each person and judge based on that. And Reach is a koichas that's higher than all the other koichas. It touches the etzem and nefesh, which is why the Gemara later on in Brachas talks about the how do we know that you make a bracha on good fragrances? Is because you say kol neshama tahalo kol halaluk. So we see that the chosha Reach has more to do with the etzem and nefesh than any of the other senses. So now when it comes to a king, usually the halacha is that he has to judge only based on edim. What we're saying, Mashiach won't need edim. He'll be able to judge based on smell, showing therefore that his malchus is going to be even higher than Moshe having his malchus. Halachas. We're continuing on halachas of Macholos Asuris. Moshe apparently wasn't able to smell the truth. Yeah, he needed edim. So he goes on to say, talking about dinim and macholos asuris, kalim and whatnot. You have to be careful not to leave by a goy a keli that he might end up using it, because then he's going to trade it up. Even you give it to a goyish repairman to repair it, you have to be if there's reason to suspect that he might have used it, then you're going to have to ask the shaila sfacham how relevant that is nowadays. Basic nish, but it's something to consider, I guess. Sometimes also, another din, sometimes you have a bird was tied up and they throw it onto the ground and then they shecht it. That would be an issur, because you have a din in Hilchos Shchita that if an animal or a bird falls on the ground, you have to make sure that it's able to walk properly for amos. So you have to keep it 24 hours, whatever. So therefore, you have to be careful with such things. And in the Shlachtos, I know they also have they also have this issue of how to do it in such a way that they're not going to have this problem of nefula, that the animal was knocked down and then you have shaylos kachos. In the shlachtos, in the slaughterhouses, yeah. Then you have the various dinim about treifas. Sometimes during the summer, you often find with geese and other birds like that. You find little bubbles or little warts and things in the kishkis, and those can be treifas. Nowadays, also sometimes you have they check the standard thing in the plants. They check for this kind of thing in the kishkis. But once in a while, you find something like that, or you find sometimes you have a collection of blood someplace near a joint or whatever, and depending on various circumstances, many times you need to ask a shaila schacham on such things.